All right, Rabbi, say good morning. Today's daf is daf Yudalid. We have a beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. 14, and we are mamish picking up. This is one of these beautiful, beautiful daf yomi daf. And we're mamish picking up at the top. First line, Mishnah, and it's a Mishnah. It's going to be a good day. Mishnah. Hashokei b'Shabbos Yom Kippur. Rabbi, interesting case. Person shechts an animal on Shabbos and on Yom Kippur. Now, we'll say, now it doesn't mean Shabbos, Yom Kippur, but rather it means Shabbos or Yom Kippur. Person shechts on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur. So I'll say, obviously, there's a chiyuv misa. Shechita on Shabbos carries with it a chiyuv misa. Shechita on Yom Kippur carries with it a chiyuv karis. Point is that he's done something bad. Now, we'll say, but we're not worried about the person's soul right now. What are we worried about? The meat, right? What's the status of the meat? So says the Gemara. This is actually fascinating. Even though I've done something that carries to the chi of misa, the shchita is good. The meat is kosher. Good. So says the Gemara. We'll say, let's analyze this. Amar Rav Huna, Darash Rav Chiya Bar Rav, Mishmei Rav. Let's listen to this. Rav Huna said as follows, that Rav Chiya Bar Rav darshan in the name of Rav, saying what? Asura ba'achila liyoma. Ultimately, against Rabosai, so Rav comes along and qualifies this ruling. What's the qualification? That ultimately, again, the meat, although it is mutter, it will be asur for that day. For that day. Rabosai, look at Rashi for just a moment. Asura ba'achila mishum shchita Shabbos liyoma. Va'afilu le'echol basar chai. So let's say again, I'm okay eating a piece of raw meat. I'm not, because obviously the shchita is good. That's what we paskin. So that means, technically speaking, I could eat it on Shabbos if I'm willing to eat raw meat. So the Gemara says, even though again the shchita is mutter, you are not allowed to eat the meat that day. Which means what? We'll say you have to wait until Matzei Shabbos to go ahead and eat it. Okay. What's the logic over here? Vinas bin Chavre Lameimar, and Rav's friends came along and added on to this, and they said, Rabbi Yehudahi, that ultimately, they're going to both say that this reflected the view of Rabbi Yehuda, to which the Gemara said, hey, Rabbi Yehuda, so which Rabbi Yehuda is this reflecting? See, here we go. Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yehuda de Hachonahi. We'll say this is actually an incredible suya. It's the Rabbi Yehuda of Hachonah, of preparation. Where does Yehuda of Hachonah say? Listen to this. This nan. Mechat chenes hadiluin lefnei bahima ves hanaveh lefnei aklovim. You are permitted on Shabbos to cut up, we'll say, diluim are gourds. You could cut up gourds before a behema, meaning to feed to an animal. And you could cut up an animal carcass, ultimately to feed to the dogs. This is on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda qualifies this, and he says it depends. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im lo haisen avela me'erev Shabbos asura lefi she'ino min hamuchan. So Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, it's true, you could feed an animal carcass to dogs on Shabbos, but there's an important qualification. What's the important qualification? That it was already an avela at the onset of Shabbos. In other words, Rabbi said that animal had to have been dead at the time that Shabbos started. Because if it was not dead at the time that Shabbos started, then what? Then what? Then ultimately, again, it's muksa, or it's what we call eino min hamucha. Look at Rashi. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Melahaisen Avela Me'arev Shabbos Asura Lefi She'eino Min Hamuchan. Also, Rabbi Yehuda says that ultimately, again, if that animal was not dead at the onset of Shabbos, you are not permitted to go ahead and serve it to your dogs, for it was not prepared. Look at Rashi just a moment. She'eino Min Hamuchan Esmol. See, here we go. It's actually a very simple din in Muktzah. Rabbi Yehuda holds that in order for an object to go ahead and be usable on Shabbos, at the onset of Shabbos, it had to have already been in its usable state. But if at the onset of Shabbos, it was not in its usable state, it's what's called eino min hamuchan, it is not prepared, and therefore unusable. So we'll say on a very simple level, the Mishnah says, I am permitted to go ahead and give of an avela to my dogs on Shabbos. Comes on a Yehuda and says that it's absolutely correct, provided what? Provided what? That it was an avela at the onset of Shabbos. If it was not an avil, or if it was just a living, breathing animal at the onset of Shabbos, then again, even if it dies on Shabbos, I cannot go ahead and feed that animal to my dog. So the Gemara says, Hachanami, so the Gemara says, what does that have to do with our case? So now we understand, Hachanami, Kevan delo isk in the esmal asros. Let's apply it to our case. What's our case in the Mishnah? What's the case in the Mishnah? Hashochet b'Shabbos. So let's remember again, the Mishnah discusses a case of a man who shechts an animal on Shabbos. What does the Mishnah paskin about say? What's the status of the shechita? Kosher. But Rav comes along and says that what? You can't eat it that day. You have to wait until Matzah Shabbos. Why do you have to wait until Matzah Shabbos to eat it? So the Gemara is suggesting that Rav holds like Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda holds that on Shabbos you cannot benefit from anything that is not min hamuchan, that was not prepared from Erev Shabbos. This food item, this animal was alive at the onset of Shabbos, therefore it was not prepared, so to speak, for consumption, and therefore again, although the shechita will be kosher, you cannot eat it on Shabbos itself. Okay, pretty straightforward. Amar Leah Abayis. Abayis is 1 second. Me dummy. Excuse me. How can you compare the two cases? So I must remember again. We're saying that Rav is holding like Rav Yehuda. This Rav Yehuda ultimately again of the case of Nevela. Rav Yehuda holds that you are permitted to feed the Nevela to your dogs on Shabbos, provided that that the animal was an Nevela when? When? At the onset of Shabbos. Right? We'll call it before Shabbos. At the onset of Shabbos. The same way that Rabbi Huda holds, that you could only feed the Nevela to your dogs if the animal was an Nevela at the onset of Shabbos, he will also hold that what? That Allah Chalamayis, although the Shechit on Shabbos is kosher, nevertheless you cannot eat it on Shabbos. Why? Because that animal was not prepared for human consumption at the onset of Shabbos. Okay. To which Abai comes along and says, 1 second. Amar Abaye, me dummy. How can you compare the case of the Nevela to the case of our Mishnah? After all, Hasam meikara muchan laAdam vahashta muchan laKlavim. Hacha meikara muchan laAdam vahashta muchan laAdam. So, Rabbi, listen to this. At the end of the day, says the Gemara as follows. So, Rabbi, this is actually quite amazing. Abaye posits that an animal is always considered to be muchan la'adam. Rav said this goes a little bit against what we learned a couple of days ago. Because if you remember again, we said before, what's the chazak of an animal? Isser, right? Which isser? Eber ben Achai. Excellent. That behema b'chaya b'cheskas isser omedes. The Gemara is saying over here something a little bit different. That at the end of the day, we assume an animal is muchan la'adam. An animal is muchan la'adam. That an animal is fit or is set aside or is ready, prepared for human consumption. In fact, Rabosai, the only time you feed your animal to the dogs is when something goes wrong, right? When it becomes an avela, when the shechita is botched or when the animal dies on its own. In other words, no one lechatchila sets aside an animal to be fed to his dogs for the simple reason that it's way too expensive dog food, right? So we'll say, so therefore again, the Gemara says something amazing. Abai says, I don't understand. In the case, Hasam meikar muchan la'adam, v'hashu muchan. We'll see, we'll say, in the case of the Mishnah, where a person is shechting on Shabbos. So the truth is, it's true. Shechita is one of the lamites and lachas, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. But in terms of the animal's usage, before Shabbos, what was the status of the animal? At least Abai posits, muchan la'adam. Now on Shechita, when you shecht it on Shabbos, we'll say, what is it? Muchan la'adam. The hachana, the preparedness of the animal, has not changed. It was to be used for human consumption before Shabbos, and now you shechted it, and now you just further solidified its usage for human consumption. Hashta, so the Gemara says, hacha, meikara muchan la'adam, the hashta muchan la'adam. So ultimately, I will say, but remember again, if you take the case of Nevela, in the case of Nevela, that animal before Shabbos was Muchan La'adam. Now it died on Shabbos. So now you want to feed it to the dogs. Hashtam, so the Gemara says, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. See, I read out of order. In the case of the nevela that you want to feed to your dogs, in the beginning, before Shabbos, it was Muchan Adam. Now it dies on Shabbos, and it's Muchan Leklavim. That's why Rabbi Huda says that ultimately, again, you can't feed it to the dogs on Shabbos. You have to eat after Shabbos, because the Maisa at the onset of Shabbos, it was Muchan Adam. However, Hacha, we'll say in our Mishnah, Me'ikara Muchan Adam. So we'll say in our Mishnah, before Shabbos, ultimately what? The animal was Muchan Adam. Now the guy did an Aveira, but he shechted it on Shabbos. But this preparedness of the animal has not changed. It is still Muchan Adam. If that's the case, the Gemara suggests, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that what? That if you want a piece, what are they called? Steak tartare? Is that the raw one? Right? If you want a piece of steak tartare on Shabbos, Rabbi Huda would agree that halacha lamaisa, you can eat it. You can eat it because the most like, the hachana of the animal has not changed. To which the Gemara says, 1 second. Mi sabris, behima bechaya la'achila omedes, are you assuming that an animal when it's alive is muchan for consumption? Behima bechaya legadel omedes. So we'll say, that's not true. This actually, when an animal is alive, Rabosai, the most valuable usage of an animal while it's alive, Rabosai, is for what? It's for breeding. It's for breeding purposes. It's actually very interesting. Right? In other words, you're making the assumption that an animal is muchan. An animal is set aside and always ready and assumed to be used for consumption. That is not the primary usage of the animal. Primary usage is for breeding purposes. So we'll say, if that's the case, so remember again, we're trying to figure out a couple of different things here. We have a Mishnah that tells us that if you shecht on Shabbos, the shechita is kosher. That's where the Mishnah ends. Rav comes along and says, yes, it's true, the shechita is kosher, but what? You can't eat it on Shabbos. We're trying to figure out, where does Rav get that from? We thought it was from Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that the animal has to be muchan. So the Gemara says, well, no, because maybe Rabbi Yehuda holds that the animal is muchan. So Rabbi said, the problem is, now we said, that's not true, because stam an animal, Rabbi said, we don't consider it muchan la'achila. In fact, we consider it muchan for its primary usage, which is breeding, or Rabbi said, potentially work. But generally, again, an animal is not considered to be muchan for consumption, because consumption generally is like the last hachana use of the animal, for one simple reason, which is you can only use it once for that purpose. You know, both say breeding it could be used multiple times, work it could be used multiple times. Once you shecht it, you shecht it. See, is that true? Mi savris, behema b'chaya l'achilo medes, behema b'chaya l'gadlo medes. Ihochi, if that's the case, I will say, listen to this. If that's the case, and this is quite fascinating, if that's the case that an animal is not muchan l'achila, we have a problem. Behema Rabbi Huda biyamtiv hechi shachtinon. I will say, watch this. If that's the case, that we assume that even according to Rabbi Huda, an animal is not muchan l'achila. An animal is muchan for something else. The something else might be breeding, or the something else might be working. According to Rabbi Huda, how do you ever shecht an animal on Yom Tov? See, Rabbi Huda say, the halacha is on Yom Tov, shechita is mutter. See, we're not used to this because we live in an age of refrigeration. But halacha l'maaseh, you could shecht on Yom Tov, that's ochel nefesh. But here's the problem. In order to go ahead and shecht on Yom Tov, Rabbi say, what has to happen? The animal has to be muchan. Right, Rabbi say, we know this. Remember from our Beya days? This is why what? Beitza shenol da biyom tov, right? What's the status of the egg that's born on Yom Tov? Rabbi say, it's a machlokes. Is it muchan? Is it not muchan? If you're telling me that an animal is not really muchan la'achila, but rather, again, it's muchan for breeding or it's muchan for working, according to Rabbi Huda, how do you ever shecht an animal on Yom Tov? It's not muchan. To which the Gemara says, Amrlo, omedes la'achila v'omedes legado. The truth is, every animal, Rabbi say, is muchan for two simultaneous purposes. It's always omedes la'achila. Obviously, it's always fit for consumption. And it's also fit for breeding. So we'll say, what happens? Get ready for this. Nishchata hovra de la'achila omedes. Lo nishchata hovra de la'gadal omedes. So we'll say, listen to this. So essentially, we'll say, what do we employ? We employ the concept of breira. So what happens? Every animal is muchan for two simultaneous purposes. It's muchan for achila, and it's muchan for breeding. If you shecht it, it turns out that what? That it was muchan for what, Rabosai? for consumption, for achila. And if you don't shecht it, it turns out that what? That it's mukhan ultimately for breeding. Therefore, halacha lemaaseh, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you go out and you shecht an animal on Yom Tiv, ultimately, again, it's huvrar. It becomes retroactively clarified that this animal was already mukhan at the onset of Yom Tiv for consumption purposes. So we'll say, so what have we just established? We've just established that Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to the concept of breira, retroactive clarification. There's only one problem. Only one problem. Bahalesle Rabbi Yehuda breira. I'll say only one problem, which is Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of Breira. Okay? Where do we know that from? This is one of these incredibly exciting Gemaras where you start out in one place and literally it's like a roller coaster. But the difference is it's one of those roller coasters in the dark, right? You don't know where you're going next. Upside down, right side up. You don't know where you're going to be. So we'll say, does Rabbi Yehuda really hold of Breira? Watch this. Menolan. So we'll say, Vahalese Rabbi Yehuda Breira. Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to the concept of Breira. And we'll say, from where do we know that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira? Listen to this. Minalan. Maybe we'll say from the following case. Listen to this case. Because we've had this case so many times throughout our journeys in Shas. Listen to this. I purchased wine from a kusi. Now we'll say, at the end of the day, we're establishing over here that kusim do not take trumas and maestros. So what has to happen over here? I have to go ahead and I'm purchasing wine from the kusim. I have to go ahead and separate that trumas and maestros as a result. Now here's the problem. What's the problem? I bought this nice barrel of wine, a 1974 right? So what happens? And I want to drink it. What's the problem? The problem is I don't have a utensil with which to separate out trumas and maestros. So what do I do in such a case? So there's a way to deal with this. What do I do? Omer, shnei lugin shani asil lahafrish, hare in truma. So what I see, Abba saying, the two lugin that I'm going to separate out at some future time, right, that should be truma. Asara maiserishon, 10 lugin that I'm going to separate out should be maiserishon. Tisha maiserishini, 9 should be maiserishini. So we'll say, again, essentially what I do is, I go ahead and, halacha lemaisa, I designate parts of the barrel of wine as trumas and maisas. So we'll say, so how does that work? So what that means is, what I'm saying is, at a future time, I'm actively separating it out. So we'll say, and then later on, when I physically separate it out, what happens? So Breira says there's a retroactive clarification that the part of the barrel of wine that I actually remove for Trumas and Maestros, retroactively it's clarified that that's the part that I designated Mitchila. And what Kai Drobo say, and this allows me to drink the wine right now. So we understand the novelty over here. Again, I'm not separating anything now. I'm just verbally declaring, I hereby designate 2 lugin as truma. I hereby designate 10 lugin as meiser. And I'm permitted now to drink the wine. And later on, when I have a clean, I actively separate out the trumas and meisers. It turns out that the parts that I separated were the parts that I had initially designated. These are Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Osun. We'll say Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon say, you are not allowed to do this. It's Aser. Now we'll say, now be Pashtos, why is it Aser? Why is it Aser? It would seem to be because Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to the concept of Breira. Remember again, this whole thing of separating out parts of the barrel now that will only be separated actively, physically separated later on, relies on the concept of retroactive clarification of Breira. If Rabbi Yehuda says it's Aser bePashtos, it's because he does not hold of Breira. To which the Gemara says, we'll say, Amud Beis, the Gemara says, no. It's not an issue of Breira. Hasam kidiktani taima. Amrus, we'll say, there by the barrel, there's a different reason. Amrulo Rabbi Meir. So we'll say, Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Meir, Ia tamoda shema yibaka hanot, v'nimtsa shoset val mafreya. We'll say Rabbi Yehuda is afraid of something else. What is he afraid of? That maybe what? Maybe the barrel will break. So we'll say if the barrel breaks, then what happens? See, let's say, in this case, where I have the barrel of wine from the kusi, I designate out the trumas and maestros. I'm going to take it tomorrow when I have a kli. And then what happens in the interim? What happens in the interim? The barrel breaks. So what happens if the barrel breaks? No more wine. If there's no more wine, then what? No ability to separate trumas and maestros. If I can't ultimately separate trumas and maestros, then it turns out retroactively, what did I drink? teva. That's what Rabbi Huda is concerned. Rabbi Huda is concerned with barrel breakage. Right? This is not a machlokes about breira. This is a machlokes about barrel breakage. What does Rabbi Meir say? Amar lahen l'chishi yibaka. I'll say Rabbi Meir's retort is very interesting. Meir says, when it breaks, we'll worry about it. Right? So we'll say, so what's amazing over here, we'll say, is actually a fundamental, like, life machlokes as well. What's unfolding over here? Rabbi Huda says, you know, when you make decisions in life, you have to make those decisions based on the possible scenarios which can unfold. Rabbi Meir says, no, you can't. The only thing you can do in life is make your decisions based on the realities which exist in the present. If you go ahead and you take into account every single potential scenario which can unfold, then what happens? Essentially, again, that will paralyze you. That will paralyze you. And I will say, amazingly enough, this fundamental, profound life machlokes is all kind of coming about around the barrel of wine purchased from a kusi. Rabbi, this, I'm sorry, we can't let you drink because it may break. Rabbi Meir says, you can't assume that the barrels in life will break. You have to assume they'll be just fine. Aye, and if they break, we'll deal with it then. But I will say, but leaving aside the philosophy, what's we're coming back to over here is that Rabbi Huda, I guess, does hold the Breira. You wanted to tell me, Rabbi said again, let's just trace our steps back. You wanted to ask, how could Rabbi Yehuda allow for shechita of an animal on Yom Tov? Right? We wanted to say, how can you shecht an animal on Yom Tov? So we'll say, after all, it's not muchan. To which we said that what? Every animal has like a dual hachana. It's muchan for consumption, it's muchan for breeding. If you go ahead and you shecht it, then it turns out that what? That retroactively, it's clarified that indeed you were making it, right? You prepared it for consumption purposes. To which the Gemara says, that's fine, except that what? Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of Breira. We wanted to prove that from this case. The good news is, this case doesn't prove that. This case, it turns out, Rabbi Yehuda has nothing to do with Breira. This case has to be, it has to do with the concern of barrel breakage. To which the Gemara says, Ella, miditani ayo. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Yehuda's lack of commitment to the concept of Breira comes out as follows. Here we go. This is actually quite interesting. So, Ditani Ayom, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Adam Masne Ashni Dvarim Ke'echad. So, this is actually quite an interesting case. A person cannot make a simultaneous, literally translated means, a person cannot create a condition on two things simultaneously. Well, say, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Ein Adam Masne, it's on the last wide line of Rashi. So watch this. Eina demasna be'iravin aminon. Last white line in Tavarashi. Be'iravin aminon masna adam aleiruvom umaniach shnei iruvim. So listen to this case. I want to create an eruv tchumin. Right. Remember again, over the course of Shabbos, I have 2,000 amos in which I am permitted to travel. Nothing to do with carrying. This is an issue of mobility. If I want to extend my eruv, I want to extend my tchum, I should say, my boundary. So what do? I do something called an eruv tchumin. We'll say on a very simple level, it's eruv tchumin. Eruv tchumin is, halacha says, home is where your food is. So essentially, if I deposit food items, somewhere within my 2,000 amos, or let's say for our purposes, at the edge of your 2,000 amos, what does that do? It extends your tchum by another 2,000 amos. So what's the case over here? Masna adam aleiruvo umaniach shnei iruvin. So we'll say in the case over here, is a person wants to go ahead and set up two eruvei tchumin. Echad besof apayim lemizrach iro, ve'echad besof apayim lema'arav. So we'll say, here's the issue. The issue is, there is a scholar in residence coming to town, right? And I know that I have to go hear him. What's the problem? I don't know if he's coming from the east or if he's coming from the west, right? I know that to get him, either way, he's going to be outside of my tchum. So I set up two eruvim, right? I set up ultimately and two eruvei tchumim. One to the west, one to the east. So here's the problem. The problem is, the halacha works, is you can't have two tchum extensions. You can't have that. So the issue over here is you can either do an eruv tchumin to the east or to the west. The problem is I don't know which direction the Talmud Chacham is coming from. So here's what I do. I set them both up, and I have a tenai. Va'omer im bachacham lemizrach shayachacham asilav emakom echad v'lishmos chutz letchum v'lidrosh eruv eishal mizrach yikna lishivisa lemizrach So listen to this. So ultimately, again, if I hear, so I set up the Eruv to the east and to the west. If I hear that Talmud Chacham came from the east, then my Eruv on the east should work. If I hear that he came from the west, my Eruv on the west should work. I will say, what happens if it's a windfall Shabbos? Balakan ulakan. We'll say, two Talmidei Chachamim, right? Two Talmidei Chachamim come to town on the same Shabbos, one from the east, one from the west. Right? Ultimately, again, I will say, then I have the choice to choose if I want the Eruv of the east or if I want the Eruv of the west. Now, watch this. So, let's go back to the Gemara for just a moment. A person cannot stipulate that two things should work simultaneously. Elo, im b'chacham l'mizrach, eruv l'mizrach. If the chacham ends up coming from the east, then the eruv on the east should work. L'mayruv, eruv l'mayruv. If it comes from the west, then the eruv of the west should work. Ve'ilu, lekan ulekan lo. The Rabbi said, but ultimately, again, if there are two Talmidei Chachamim who come, one from the east, one from the west, I can't have both directions. Vavinaba. And Rabbi said, we said, Maishna lakan ulakan dilo. We'll say, why is it that I can't have it both directions? There ain't breira. Because ultimately, again, there's no breira. I don't understand. Mizrach umayrav nami ain't breira. We'll say, all of these cases are breira. Because we'll say, what's happening over here? We'll say, let's take this simple case. I want to go here, the Talmud Chacham. I don't know if it's coming from the east or from the west. What do I do? Erev Shabbos. I put an Erev to the east, put an Erev to the west. Then what happens? Shabbos morning. Someone tells me, oh, the Talmud Chacham came from the east. So what happens in that moment when I hear about it? What happens in that moment? It's retroactively clarified that the Erev that I put in the east on Erev Shabbos is the Erev I'm using. That's Breira. That's Breira also, I will say. So I don't understand. What does it mean? So learners, all these cases are Breira. To which the Gemara says, no, it's not, and I'll tell you why. Rabbi Yochanan, ukivar ba chacham. Rabbi says, in fact, the case that Rabbi Huda, the way Rabbi Huda sets it up, it's not a case of Breira. So he'll say, what Breira means is that there was information available now that was not available beforehand. And now, based on the information that I have now, there's a retroactive clarification of my previous actions. In fact, Rabbi Huda says the case is like this. The Talmud Chacham is coming. Erev Shabbos, right? He comes from the east or from the west. I don't know which one. Therefore, I set up the Eruv on both directions. Rabbi said, but the case is where the Talmud Chacham already came to town when? When? Before Shabbos. The difference is, see, Rabbi said, so he was in town, which means what, Rabbi said? If he was in town already Erev Shabbos, then what does that mean? My Eruv took hold already Erev Shabbos. What's missing here? My knowledge. There's no retroactive clarification because the Eruv was already solidified at the beginning of Shabbos. I just did not know. So we'll say, Breira means that the information that I have now was not available beforehand. This is not a case of Breira, says Rabbi Huda. The Talmud Chacham was already in town. He was already eating Erev Shabbos Kugel, right? Already, again, about saying Erev Shabbos. So it was already clear if it came from the east or from the west, which means that my Eruv was already established beforehand. I didn't know. The information didn't get to me. But that's not Breira. Ella, so we'll say, so therefore again, all we're trying to do over here is, we made a statement that Rabbi Huda does not subscribe to Breira. We're just trying to see, where do you know that from, that Rabbi Huda rejects the concept of Breira. So now we're on a third try. The first try was the wine from the Kusim. That didn't work because it turned out that it was about the barrel. The second case over here turns out that doesn't work either about the Eruv. Ella, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Huda de Kalim hi. Rather, I will say, you have to say that it's the Rabbi Huda of Kalim. I will say, what's the case of Kalim? Again, all of these are incredible cases on their own as well. Watch this. Disnan. Kala Kalim Hanitalin B'Shabbos. Well, so listen to this interesting case. Let's say you have a utensil which is permitted to be moved on Shabbos. Right? In other words, it's not Muktzah. It's permitted Kali. And then what happens? It breaks. It breaks on Shabbos. So I will say, so what's the Shaila now? What's the Shaila? Am I permitted to go ahead and move the shard? Right? Am I permitted to move the shard on Shabbos? Shevrei nitalin. So the shard is permissible, right? You can move it on Shabbos. Or bilvad Sheyehu osin me'in melacha. Rabbi said, this is assuming that what? That the shard is usable for the same primary usage. In other words, Rabbi said that a shard is permitted if what? If it can be used for this, if it can be used like the kli was used. For example, so the Gemara is giving an example. Areva. Rabbi said, let's add a mixing bowl. And the mixing bowl broke. Lechas osin pikavis. Rabbi said, as long as the shard is large enough that it could serve as a covering for the top of a barrel. That's good enough. Shivrei zchuchis. We'll say if I have a glass utensil which broke, lachasos ben piapach, as long as, again, the piece of glass is usable to go ahead and cover the opening of the jug. So what the Tanakhama holds, I will say, is as long as the shard is usable in some type of constructive fashion, then ultimately, again, the shard will not be mukta. Rabbi Huda disagrees. He says, Rabbi Huda Omer, Ubilvachi hu osin me'in melachton. See, Rabbi Huda adds in a very nuanced point, which is, it's not enough for the shard to be usable, but the shard has to be usable in what capacity? In a way that resembles the primary usage of the kli from which it came from. So, for example, he says, Shivrei Areva, if you have a mixing bowl. You also have a mixing bowl, and the mixing bowl broke. So according to the Tanakhama, as long as the shard is big enough to do what? To do what? According to the Tanakhama, cover the barrel. Whereas as long as it's usable, but Torah's kli, that's enough. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. It has to be large enough. Lotzuk lesocha mikveh. To pour in porridge. In other words, we'll say, a mixing bowl is able to receive contents. Ultimately, again, the shard of a mixing bowl is only considered to be not muktzah if what, we'll say, if the shard is large enough to be able to retain contents in it. Shivrei zchuchis. Similarly, again, if you have a glass utensil, excuse me, that broke, the shard won't be muktzah as long as what? Latzuk lesochan shemen. As long as the shard is large enough that you can go ahead and pour oil into it. Me'ein malach don in, me'ein malach acheres lo. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the only time the shard will not be mukza is when the shard could perform a similar type of malacha to the original kli. If the shard cannot perform the same malacha like the original kli, then the shard ultimately again will be mukza. To which the Gemara says, "Hachanami." So we'll say, "Sasoti you'll say over here." They will say, "We're going back to the case of shechita, but shechita on Shabbos. Our case of shechita on Shabbos. Hachanami, kevan delo iskin me esmal asura." Ultimately, again, we'll say, you'll have to see over here. Rashi says, "We'll say if you look at Rashi, this is the first of the widest lines on the bottom. Hachanami, kevan delo iskin me esmal laachila." Right, so you'll have to say in the Mishnah that since ultimately on Erev Shabbos, this animal was not actively designated for consumption purposes, therefore what? Therefore, when you shecht it on Shabbos, Rabosai, you are not permitted to eat it. So the Gemara is suggesting the same way that Rabbi Yehuda will say that the only time that the shard is movable is if the shard is usable in a way that resembles the usage of the original complete kli. But if it's usable for something else, ultimately, again, it's mukta. So too in the case of the animal. When the animal before Shabbos was not mukhan la'achila, it was not actively designated for consumption purposes. Therefore, when you shecht it and you now transform it into a food item, Rabbi Huda will say that it is mukta for the day. You could eat it matzah Shabbos, but you cannot eat it on Shabbos itself. Amar the Abaye says, again, I don't understand how you're comparing the cases. Me dummy. Hasam meikarakli, vahashta sheverkli, vahavi le nolad. So we'll say, Abaye says, okay, Rabbi Huda, I understand what you're saying in the case of the kli. In the case of the kli, at the onset of Shabbos, right, it was for the beginning of Shabbos, this kli was what? This kli was a kli. It was a utensil. Now it broke. And there's a shard. I will say, that shard ultimately is what? That shard is nolad. That shard is something new. Panim chadashos ba'olakan. So Rabbi Yehuda will say, if the shard has a usage which resembles the original kli, fantastic. Then it's not mukza. But I will say, if the shard does not have a usage which resembles the original kli, then that's nolad. That's a new kli that's come here. If it's a new kli that's come here, that's why it's mukza. However, again, the Gemara says, hacha, me'ikara uchla, ulebasof, uchla de ifrasu. So I'll say ultimately again, but in the beginning, by an animal, Rabbi says, because that's what we said before, in the beginning, an animal was always ochel. So whenever you look at a cow, what do you see? What do you see? Dinner, right? Whenever you look at a cow, right? That's what you see, Rabbi say. Or so again, it's ochel by definition. It's ochel. It happens to be now that you shechted it. It's ochel in a different state. But a cow always represents ochel. Look at Rashi this month, Rabbi say. Hacha meikara ochlo dal korchach behema b'chaya lach. Rabbi say second wide line in Rashi. Dal korchach behema b'chaya lach ilomenes. We'll say ultimately again, an animal during its lifetime, right, is always omid la'achila, kid ukminan la'el, di'i legadal behimad Rabbi Yehuda hechi shachkina b'yamtav. So we'll say, remember again, we have to accept the premise that an animal is always omid la'achila. It's not saying that's the sole use of the animal, but lamais again, it's always omid la'achila. Because remember again, going backwards, if it's not omid la'achila, then how can you shecht an animal on yomtiv? Remember again, in order to shecht an animal on yomtiv, it has to be muchan. So an animal is always omid la'achila. So what's the difference over here? Rashi goes on, di'ifris nishvar v'nefesh. So an animal is always omid la'achila. When you shecht it, it's what we call uchla de'ifrisu. We'll say uchla de'ifrisu means that it's food detached from food. In other words, once you shecht it and you cut off a piece, that's food that derives from food. So we'll say, so ultimately, again, halacha l'maisa, the Gemara is just making a distinction here. The case of the kli is different, because the case of the kli is first you had a kli, now you have a shard. If the shard can be used for the same purpose, then it's not muktzah, then it's still considered to be the kli. If the shard cannot be used for the same purpose, it'll be muktzah. The animal, Rabbi Osai, is ochel. It was ochel when it was alive, and now it's just a different form of ochel once it's slaughtered. To which the Gemara says, V'shamineli Rabbi Yehuda, damra ochla de'ifris shapir dami. Rabbi Osai, it turns out that what? That according to Rabbi Yehuda, ochla de'ifris, food that becomes separated is still called food, and therefore again it's considered to be muchan, and therefore would be permitted ultimately again for consumption. And I will say, so now what we're saying is, it sounds like that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, when you shecht on Shabbos, what? You should be permitted to go ahead and eat it. That's what it sounds like, I will say, because remember again, Rabbi Yehuda holds that when food detaches from food, it still has the status of food, and therefore is muchan, is prepared, and therefore again is consumable on Shabbos. Where do we find this? Supposed to say another incredible case. Here we go. This nan ain soaked in a saperos lotzi mehen mashke. Supposed to say the halacha is on Shabbos. Right, you decide you want to have a fresh cup of orange juice on Shabbos morning. It's usher. You're not allowed to squeeze fruit for their juices on Shabbos. Schita is one of the 39 malachas. The malacha is really dosh. The malacha is threshing. Schita, squeezing out juices from fruit, is one of the 39 malachas. Or I should say, is a tolda of one of the 39 malachas. Saying, you are not permitted to squeeze fruit in order to extract their juices on Shabbos. I will say, so here's an interesting case. V'im yatsu me'atzman asurin. Now, we'll say, now what happens if the juices came out on its own? Right? I left the fruit and the juices oozed out on their own. Am I permitted to drink the juice? So the halacha is asurin. Ultimately, again, the juices are still asurin. Now, we'll say, now what's the reason the juices are still asurin? Rashi points out, gzeir shami yischot. There's a concern that if we let you drink the juices which oozed out on their own, you may come to what? You may come to squeeze the fruit. So therefore, we're going to say mashkin shazavu, even if the juices, you know, kind of, what's the right word? Yeah, ooze out on their own, you can't drink it. Now, I will say, watch this. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im lo ochlin. So Rabbi Yehuda says, the truth is, it depends on the type of fruit, or it depends on the item, I should say. Im lo ochlin. Rabbi Yehuda says, if the fruit or the items in question are normally something that are not used for their juices, but are consumed, hayotze mehen mutter, then the juices which ooze out are mutter. Vim lamashkin, but if the item is normally used for its juices, hayotze mehen aser. That which oozes out will be aser. I will say, what's Rabbi Yehuda's logic? It's actually very logical. Rabbi Yehuda will say, listen, the only time you have to be concerned that someone will come to squeeze out the fruit for its juice, if you allow them to drink the juice that oozed out on its own, is when? When it's a type of fruit that's normally used for its juices. So we'll say, just for argument's sake, let's say oranges are normally used for their juices. So Rabbi Yehuda will say, in that case, we won't allow you to drink the juice that oozes out on its own, out of a fear that if we allow you to drink that juice, what may happen? What may happen? You may come to go ahead and squeeze the fruit itself. But let's say, Rabbi say, with a different fruit that is normally used for consumption, not for its juices, Rabbi Huda will say that if the juice oozes out on its own, you can drink the juice. Why? Because since that fruit is not normally used for its juices, but used for consumption, we're not concerned that if we allow you to drink the juice that oozed out on its own, you may come to proactively squeeze the fruit. Lavit ma'ala. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? You see from here that ultimately, again, according to Rabbi Huda, when you have a food item, an item that's normally consumed, anything that separates from that food, a food item, has the same status of what? Of the food item itself. So let's say again, assuming that oranges are normally consumed and not squeezed, for purposes of our example over here, Rabbi Huda will say, what's the status of the juice that oozes out? Right? It's mutter. You can eat it. Why? Why? Because that juice has the same status as the orange itself. So the Gemara says, look at Rashi just a moment, Rabbi Osai. Actually, not yet. So the Gemara says, Lav itimar alo. Did we not comment about that? Am Rabbi Huda Amar Shmuel. Moda hayi Rabbi Huda lechachamim besali zesim va'anovim. Rabbi Osai is actually very interesting. That Rabbi Huda gave it to chachamim in cases of baskets of olives or grapes. They're both saying, now, what does that mean that he greased the case? Watch, look at Rashi just a moment. It's a 7 lines up from the bottom of Rashi. When it comes to olives and grapes, even if you actively set them aside for consumption purposes, listen to this. In a case of olives and grapes, Rabbi Osai. So interestingly enough, what's the halacha? The halacha is that because most people squeeze olives and grapes for their juices, even if halacha lamaisa, your intention is to consume them, not to go ahead and squeeze them out, nevertheless, the halacha is that what? Any juices which flow from them are going to be aser. Rabbi Osai, what's the logic behind that? Because ultimately, again, since most people use grapes and use olives, not for the fruit itself, but for the juices, right? For the oil, for the juice that comes from the grapes. Therefore, it's almost like batla daita itzor of Adam. Right? That ultimately, again, my individual das is not significant. So watch this. So modai Rabbi Huda chamim besali zeisim va'anavim. Alma, what do you see from here? Kevon de l'srita kaimi yav daite. We'll say what you see over here is that halacha l'maisa, since grapes and olives ultimately are normally squeezed, Therefore again, that's his das. Rashi says, "Kevon de lahachi kaimi staman avim yoiv daite alai lamashka v'chiyav amashkin havelin eskayim achshavto ugzira shami yischot." Fine. So therefore again, says Gemara Bosei, how does this impact us? Hachinami kevon de l'shchita kaima yoiv daite. We'll say so to over here. We should say so. We'll say again, going back to what we said before, just like stam grapes and olives are only l'shchita, and therefore even if your particular intention is what? Is to go ahead and eat it, since normally grapes and olives are set aside for pressing purposes. Therefore, halacha lemaisa, when the juices come out, it's considered as if you want the juices. Therefore, you can't drink the juices out of a concern that you may come to proactively squeeze the olives and grapes. So too, the Gemara says, I will say, looping all the way back, Hachinami, so too in the case of the animal, the l'shchita kaima. Now we'll say, again, in general, an animal, like we keep saying before, is always all made for consumption. Therefore, what? Yohiv daite. We'll say, yohiv daite means what? We'll say, that Allah, look at Rashi, kevin yohiv daite, di imishcha ta achele, the kevin de daite behachi, gazmina banami, yishar say lachila, asi lachad mishchita. So we'll say, just like Allah, we assume, here we go, let's just complete this circuit. We assume that Allah, by grapes and olives, people, even if my intention right now is to eat that basket of grapes and olives. But again, general use of grapes and olives is for what? Is for what? Juices. Therefore, if juices come out of it, I'm not permitted to go ahead and drink it. Why? Out of a concern that I may come to proactively press the olives and the grapes. So, Rabbi Osei, we should say that halacha lemaisa, when it comes to the shechita of an animal, animals are normally omeid for shechita, right? It's omeid to be consumed. And we should be concerned that what? That if we allow you to eat of the shechita on Shabbos, what's going to happen? You may come to proactively shecht on Shabbos. So we'll say, what comes out of here, the Gemara is suggesting, remember, this is all Rav and Rabbi Huda. Rav is going to say, remember, let's just get this straight. The Mishnah said, if you shecht on Shabbos, what's the status? Shechita? kosher. Rav comes along and says, but what can't you do? You can't eat it on Shabbos. Why not? It turns out that it sounds like what we're saying over, you can't eat it on Shabbos, because we're concerned that if we allow you to eat of an animal illegally shechted on Shabbos, you may come to what? Proactively shechted on Shabbos. In the same way, Rabbi say that halacha lemaisa, we don't allow you to eat of the juices which ooze out of the olives and the grapes, lest you come to proactively squeeze. That's why we won't let you go ahead and eat of the shechit on Shabbos. To which the Gemara says, one second, midi hu taima ela l'rab. Rabbi say, remember again, the Gemara says, you're getting carried away. This whole thing was just a statement of Rav. Rav was the only one who said you can't eat of the shechit on Shabbos. Ha amar Rav, chaluk hayu Rabbi Huda, afilu bezeisim va'anovim. Yet I will say Rav was of the opinion that Rabbi Huda disagreed with the rabbis, even in the case of zeisim va'anovim. Look at Rashi. Chalukaya umatir v'hachanami amai asur liyoma. But I'll say, listen to this. The Gemara says something amazing. Remember, we're getting ourselves all in a tizzy about this. Meanwhile, the Mishnah never said anything about being prohibited on Shabbos. Only Rav was the one who said it's prohibited on Shabbos. And I will say, here's the kicker. Rav said that Rabbi Huda disagrees even in the case of Zeisim Va'anovim. Right? Rav's listening to Rabbi Huda, he said, Allah Chalai said, if I had a basket of Zeisim and Anovim that I was going to eat on Shabbos, not drink, and I'm not going to squeeze, I'm going to eat them, right? Set aside for Achila, Rav said that according to Rabbi Huda, he would hold that Halacha L'maisa, the juices that ooze out, in fact, are permitted. So I will say, therefore, again, this whole discussion, therefore, is blown out of the water, and we're back to square one. So we'll say, bottom line, what we're left with is the Psak of the Mishnah, which is, if someone chefs on Shabbos, the Shechita is good. We do have a statement of Rav that says, however, you cannot eat it on Shabbos itself, but again, we thought this whole blot, that it was going to be reflective of the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Now it turns out that Rav must be aligning himself with someone else, because the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda does not work with the statement of Rav. Who, in fact, does Rav align his shita with, that you cannot eat the shechita on Shabbos? Mirat Hashem, to be continued tomorrow.